Good afternoon, everybody. I'd like to call this Planning Commission meeting to order. First of all, determination of a quorum, and I see that there are four of us here, so we do have a quorum. Would somebody like to make a motion to adopt tonight's agenda?
I move that we adopt tonight's agenda.
Do I have a second?
I'll second.
All those in favor?
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion passes. At this time, visitor communication. It appears that we have no one present.
So I think we might have a couple people attending over Zoom. Would you take your presentation down and I'll see who's on?
Thank you.
Thank you.
See how fast I forgot that?
Okay, so I see three attendees over Zoom. I'm going to call your name out and I'm going to allow you to talk when I call your name, and if you could say pass or no comment, or please provide your comment by stating your name and address for the record.
And I might like to say that this is comment for things that are not on tonight's agenda.
Thank you. I'm going to start with Aaron Carpenter. Do you want to provide any comments?
Pass.
Thank you. The next name I'm going to call is Curtis Cook. Would you like to provide any comments tonight?
Do you hear me?
I can. Thank you.
Yep. So we actually work in the STR industry, and some things I feel that are possibly missing from this agenda is maybe a little bit more insight on having more regulations or inspections done on properties. Ultimately speaking, we have seen great properties and great managers and great homeowners, but then there's also the issues that we run into where there's safety and standards such as fire access, as well as also proper equipment on site for guests. It's something that we have seen to be a concern that could be added to this agenda that also give a little bit better insight on properties and the way that they would be maintained for a long-term standing. Otherwise, some other comments that were made, an additional point was about the damages to long-term rentals versus short-term rentals, and I can concur with that. We see a lot more damage. Yes, sir? You're yes, ma'am?
I'm sorry to interrupt you, but this is the time for comments that are not related to any agenda items. It sounds like you're talking about the short-term rentals and stuff, and if you would mind, would you mind saving that until we get to that?
Yes, ma'am, I could do that.
Thank you.
My apologies.
Okay, anything else you'd like to say?
Nope, that will be it.
Okay, thank you, Curtis. All right, the next name I see is RM. Would you like to provide comments on anything that's not on the agenda tonight?
I'll pass.
Thank you. And the last name I see is Eric Strobel. Would you like to provide any comments on items that are not on the agenda tonight? You can say pass or no comment. Hearing none, I'm going to move on. Okay, that's everyone.
Okay. Now we will go ahead with the workshop. Matt?
Thank you, Vice Chair, Acting Chair Converse. Matthew Martin, City of Sisters Community Development Department. Thank you for this time and good evening, commissioners and those attending via Zoom this evening. What we have before you tonight is a continued conversations regarding short-term rental regulations and an analysis of those regulations and the administration of our current short-term rental program. Why we're coming to you is based on a City Council goal to evaluate the short-term rental program to identify what those impacts and mitigate those adverse impacts on the community. Specifically highlighted by the City Council is a concern with the availability of housing for long-term occupancy and the nuisances potentially created by short-term rentals. So as part of this process, this is again a continuation of a series of workshops that we've had both with the Planning Commission as well as City Council. Last fall, we met with the Council and Commission to as an introduction of the program, to provide an overview of the regulatory framework, what our standards are for land use approval, and then obtaining the operator's license, and then what those impacts are from a financial component, code enforcement, and other with respect to how many short-term rentals are operating and how that's going. And then to identify kind of a preliminary kind of punch list of areas to further evaluate or potential changes to the program to consider. And so after that, staff went and prepared the documents that we have and information that we have prepared for tonight's discussion and presented those to the City Council last month or on the 24th, just about a week or so ago. For some background in particular, Commissioner Retzman, because you weren't in attendance or a commissioner at the time in that October meeting, that would give you, again, some background to the overall aspects of the program and the background in the conversations that we're continuing here tonight. So based on the information expressed and comments made by council and commission, staff has returned with some information regarding Deschutes County Sheriff call data specific to short-term rental properties. And staff issued and circulated a survey to short-term rental owners and operators. And so we're back with the results of that survey. And then there was interest in analyzing the changes to the concentration limits that are currently applicable. Currently, that's no short-term rentals within 250 feet of the subject property, looking at what those potential impacts would be for expanding that to 500 feet. So just some more information as you consider kind of how your impressions and on how the program's operating today and those other considerations for potential changes. So we'll go over this this data and then at the conclusion highlight the recommendations or the concepts that the City Council has expressed that are continued from those earlier conversations and many of which are quite similar to the comments and opinions that the Planning Commission previously provided. So happy to entertain questions throughout the presentation, have this be a dialogue, but I certainly want to afford plenty of time for commissioner discussion. So first, diving into the sheriff's call data. So we reached out to Deschutes County Sheriff, who provides police services within the city limits, and requested all call data for short-term rental properties in the preceding five-year time period. And the results being identifying 258 calls to those short-term rental properties. I want to note that expressed from the sheriff's office is that there was known 65 of those reported calls were related to a previous long-term occupant of one of these units that has since been converted or licensed to be a short-term rental. So those were not in any way potentially related to the short-term rental operation. So I also want to know kind of the limitations of the data that are available to us is that of the remaining 193 calls, it's the way the calls are recorded, it's not possible to distinguish if those were directly related to short-term rental occupants or that operation of the short-term rental. So it could be for any number of reasons or the primary resident of the property may be the subject of that call or other circumstance related to the property.
Matt, what are the boundaries? Where's this information from? Is it Sisters Country? Is it within the city limits?
Yeah, thank you. This is directly, so when we're looking at these calls versus the total number of calls, it's all related to calls within the city limits of Sisters.
Okay.
So all 193 are those short-term rental properties within the city limits. And so when we're comparing that to the total number of calls to the city of Sisters, those 30,000 are all within the city limits. So acknowledging that of the overall calls, less than 1% are related to short-term rental properties. But I, again, want to emphasize that we don't know if it's related to the actual occupants or operation of the short-term rental. But taking that with a grain of salt. To characterize the types of calls there, as you would expect, is noise, parking complaints, loose animals, disputes, welfare checks, and suspicious behavior. And also compiled is noting that the overall number of calls to individual properties during that time frame, and noting the large majority were less than four, and many of which received no complaints related to those properties. Calls to the properties. Any questions about the sheriff data before we move on? Questions, comments?
Am I seeing that it's really a non-issue when it comes to sheriff's calls and short-term rental properties here in Sisters?
Or I think that's a takeaway as one component of this. It's worth noting that city council members did note that this takes someone being compelled to call the sheriff, you know, to rise to a level of wanting to reach out to law enforcement due to an issue. In many cases, they may reach out to city staff, of which we noted in the preceding 3 years, we received 10 code enforcement complaints. Again, kind of a relatively low number. And so we're limited by our tools and the threshold of how individuals would respond. But based on the data that's available, yeah, I think it's a relatively low number.
Thank you.
Okay, moving to the owner-operator survey. So staff prepared a survey through the Qualtrics online survey program and distributed that with unique invitations to 122 either owner and or operators of short-term rentals within Sisters. So that not only includes the property owner, but some may use a property management service. And so we contacted them as well because they have valuable input to provide. Of those 122, we received 59, an almost 50% response rate for the survey. So I'm really pleased to see those results and the amount of activity and reviewing the summary report to see the time and the detail that they provided is invaluable to this process and kind of provides some detailed, valuable insight. I'll acknowledge that in some of the responses, some had experiences with technical difficulties or the construct of the survey. I'll take responsibility for that. I went through plenty of run-throughs on the operation of it, but goes live and can't pull it back. So I apologize for those that may have had difficulties and put persevering and providing the input anyway. So with all of that said, just some notable results that I identified is that 89% only operate one short-term rental in the city limits. Of those owners, 63% live within Central Oregon, and a large majority also beyond that live in Oregon. And 37% rent their primary residence. That means that that's their home. And so when they're renting it, it's either renting a room or a portion of the home, or they're renting it while they're away, either on weekends or vacations. Noting most renters are vacationers, but a good portion were identified as traveling workers that are here for business. And as expected, the highest occupancies are during the summer months, but occupancy year round was consistent. We wanted to understand what those challenges, in particular, thinking about if there are opportunities for these properties to be utilized for long-term occupancy. So we wanted to understand what challenges or potential incentives or opportunities there may be for long-term rental. So the challenges identified were, just as I was speaking to, it's their primary residence. So it's that's not available for renting it for others to utilize that property. And then the cost of operate or providing that long-term rental, but also the revenue generation for a short-term rental can, in many instances, exceed that, maybe able to recover or receive with a long-term tenant. And then noting the challenges folks have experienced or perceived as issues with tenants and potential damage to properties and just that relationship And then also noting the Oregon landlord-tenant laws can be a bit of a challenge for that landlord, as it provides, well, without editorializing, but provides protections for tenants, and that it can be challenging to navigate. So what could we could be considered to offer to incentivize renting long-term? And a lot of it came down to money, providing those tax incentives or tax breaks for these properties, or cash payments to help subsidize any operation or revenue shortfalls that related to long-term rental. But one noted was perhaps waiving or providing additional grace to the required rental of the property on an annual basis. So you're required now to rent the property at least one day within a year. There were some that would consider it if you could extend that, perhaps allowing you to rent it long term, but not lose your license, having not rented it within a 1, 2, 3 year time period. So a bit of a grace period to afford it or provide it as that alternative rental opportunity. Questions or comments now regarding the survey, or okay.
Great feedback.
I thought it was great. And I'll put on the record a great thank you to those that participated and engaged in that process.
Yeah, I agree. It's amazing to get that high a percentage of responses and the details of the comments.
Yeah, I think your normal response for surveys is like 7%. So to have close to 50.
Yeah, and so clearly there's an interest. And so I think it was a real opportunity to engage with those owner operators as we initiate this conversation and continue it to potential formal action in making changes to the program. So getting this initial engagement is hopefully just a start, and then we can continue into the future. Okay, moving to the analysis of increasing the concentration buffer. Again, noting that currently in our code, it is a limit for new short-term rentals. You cannot have another active short-term rental within 250 feet of your property. There was a consideration of expanding that to further restrict the concentration within those buffers. And the analysis that we coordinated with our GIS staff is evaluating what those impacts would be to increasing that to 500 feet. So I do want to note currently that 250-foot buffer does apply to the residential districts, multifamily residential district, North Sisters Business Park, and Sun Ranch Residential District. The concentration buffer does not apply, so those area, the commercial districts of downtown and highway commercial are exempt from the applicability of that buffer. So you can have ones right next door, for example. And they're not applicable currently to condominiums in any zone. So,
can I ask a question about the condominium? Just clarification, when you say they're not applicable to condominiums, is that multiple units within a condominium, or, you know, within that 250 feet? So they're exempt from that? Is
correct. Okay. Yeah. So all the units within a condominium development could be short-term rentals at this point. So side-by-side image, just to show give you a visual on the buffer and the mapping that we did. So the yellow provides the 250-foot buffer, and then the lighter yellow are those properties that are not eligible, because a portion of that 250-foot buffer touches those properties. So that's on the left. On the right is the purple color scheme with the 500-foot buffer, and the lavender is identifying those properties that would not be eligible with portions of property beyond the buffer itself. So this is just to give you an idea of what that impact would be on a kind of a visual scale. So we've merged them here. And so this is Western Sisters out north of the high school. And you can see that, you know, it expanding the buffer does have a relatively large impact on the number of properties that may be eligible in this area. Noting that we did not remove those zones that short-term rentals are currently not allowed, such as the public facility district to the south. The commercial district is shown with the buffer for consideration. And then, of course, the buffer does extend outside the city limits where we don't have jurisdiction. And we'll get to the number of properties that are currently or would be eligible with the change in the buffer. But I want to note, just as we're sitting on this map, that, for example, if a short-term rental were to be located showing my cursor just north of the track, if a short-term rental would be established there, that would eliminate a good number of properties with just one additional short-term rental in that area of town. So it's not, when we see a list of 300 eligible properties, that quickly diminishes based on the location of the property, any new short-term rental. So keeping that in mind as we think about these numbers. Also, this does not contemplate those properties or those developments that have homeowners associations and codes, covenants, and restrictions, or CC&Rs. So we do know that there are some neighborhoods that prohibit short-term rentals, but the city does not have jurisdiction or responsibility to enforce those CC&Rs. But that is a factor when we're looking at the cumulative number. But as noted by the council, those CC&Rs can change, and thereby allowing them later. So we do need to at least consider the impacts within those areas. Then moving to the northern portion of town, just again noting that we have a couple short-term rentals there, west of the airport. And, you know, here's one example that while there may be additional properties eligible with 250-foot buffer, increasing to 5, this entire development would not be eligible with that increase. And then trying to capture the larger areas of town. So noting, you know, you see a lot of color in particular in the residential district to the south, and then the northeast, that is largely not eligible today, but certainly would be considerably restricted if applied with a larger buffer. But what does this mean kind of in the numbers? So if we were to increase it to 500 feet, only 14% of residential district lots would be eligible. That's a total of 311, or 110 fewer lots would be eligible. Multifamily, only 28% would be eligible, and resulting in 389 or 144 fewer. Noting that we did analyze applying the buffer within the downtown commercial district, highway commercial, but noting that applying any buffer would have a considerable impact within those areas. And I'll note, and here while we sit here, maybe it's a chance to kind of move to council's recommendations. One of those recommendations, or after further thought, they're not much of an appetite to apply the concentration buffer to the commercial districts, because it would, is under the notion that overnight lodging units are allowed in those commercial districts. Perhaps that's where the impacts could or most easily be absorbed, and it removes it from those impacts from the residential districts. And noting that at City Council, and I believe at the Planning Commission at the previous workshop, a developer is contemplating and been working for years on a potential project off of Adams, and that would and is all predicated on the short-term rental use of the second floor units. And so she provided some testimony as to the not only the efforts and expense she's gone to under the notion she could use the property under, as a short-term rental, but the idea that it's located with the downtown commercial district and all those kind of ideas of concentrating short-term rentals in that area. But City Council is interested in further consideration of expanding the buffer to something more than 250 feet and perhaps this 500 foot. Do want to consider applying the concentration limit to condominium developments. So in the example that you noted, Commissioner Retzman, it would be really limited to one or existing, but one short-term rental within that development. As noted by the by the Planning Commission before, and some councilors were receptive to considering increasing the minimum number of days that are required to be rented. Right now, it's one day. Perhaps considering increasing that to another number, if that's 7 days, 2 weeks, or what have you. And there's difference of opinions related to that. Some councilors noted that if I'm concerned about the impacts of a short-term rental, I'd rather it be one day. And so they rent that one day and they can secure that, but they're not receiving the impacts that you would if it were more rented more frequently. The converse of that is that increasing the number of days provides more of an economic driver related to the revenue, not only for individual property owners, but the community and those tourist accommodations and all that comes with that. There is a big interest in exploring limiting the transferability of pre-existing short-term rentals. These are those that were approved prior to the adoption of the framework that we have in place today that was adopted in 2018. So they're allowed to be transferred to new property owners, whereas those approved after 2018, they need to new owners need to receive a new license, a new land use approval. This is one, all of these, we need to do a detailed legal analysis to look at those potential implications. This one in particular may be challenging, but we're certainly exploring it because noting that these pre-existing short-term rentals are identified as a non-conforming use or a vested right of that property. And therefore, as long as that non-conforming use continues in operation without abandonment, then you're allowed to continue with that operation and then transfer it to future owners. The concept that the councilors have identified is not just saying, no, you cannot transfer, but the idea is that you can transfer it once or twice, and under the notion that new buyer will know with their eyes wide open that they're not going to be able to transfer this much further or at all. But again, we've been in consult with legal counsel just to kind of evaluate that. We'll be bringing that analysis back to City Council and you, the Planning Commission, so you know if that's a viable option there. Beyond our existing standards, the council and I think the Planning Commission noted interest in prohibiting short-term rentals in new urban growth boundary expansion and annexation areas under the notion that those housing units are there to provide housing within the community to meet the need that's been identified in our housing needs analysis. So that prohibition of short-term rentals would reserve that for long-term occupancy. And then lastly, an interest in establishing a moratorium or a pause, however you frame it, on the issuance of short-term rental permits during this analysis time period. And that would be an action by City Council. And the idea is that we just kind of put that pause on so that we can get the analysis complete, that we make sure that we're not going down the wrong a path with unintended consequence while we're doing this study. So that does come with the additional legal analysis. And so that's one other that we'll be bringing back with more information. So that's the extent of my comments. We do have Scott Woodford, our community development director, joining us remotely if he has any comments now or is available for to respond or provide additional context. So I will.
Well, I was just going to say, I have a question. So the council clearly wants to get rid of, wants there to be way fewer short-term rentals in town, as I'm reading that. Is that because they think it will help with housing needs for people, middle income and stuff? What's driving that specifically? What do they hope the outcome is if we eliminate them? Or
I think noting that it's kind of, I think the goal here is to limit the increase in number of units, not necessarily to eliminate short-term rentals. I think it goes back to what that goal is a concern with the availability of housing for long-term occupancy, and then those known or perceived nuisances associated with short-term rentals. So the livability factor and the impact on neighborhoods. So really concerned about that, those impacts of the long-term residents, you know, that are associated with short-term rentals, but looking for opportunities for additional housing. So I think that's where, knowing that the primary residence response of nearly 40% is that, so you're not going to, that impact isn't there. But one of the counselors noted that, I guess anecdotally, you know, not to quote her, but there was a property that was sold recently and then converted to a short-term rental, and kind of a concern with that being lost from a potent, it was available, but lost and through the kind of the bidding war was lost out to folks that ultimately got it approved for short-term rental. And it wasn't affordable housing. It wasn't necessarily middle housing. It was a higher end property. And so the concept is, well, that's not going to solve your affordable housing concern, but she noted, but that could be available for some of your doctors, your other business leaders or others that you may want to have in the community that still can't find housing because of those limited opportunities or that are lost to short-term rentals. So.
Has there been any analysis done to show that if we reduce the number of short-term rentals, that those would transfer to be long-term rentals? Or are people just going to say, forget it? I mean, has there been any analysis done to see if that really is going to be part of the answer to the housing issue?
Got a lot of metadata here.
That's the extent of, and the I think the most valuable data that we do have available, you know, free market and providing that, if we limit the opportunities for short-term rentals, well, then they would need to be some type of residential use, and it's either as their primary residence, a long-term rental, or their vacation or second homes. I know that we do have a large number, and I don't have the stat, but a large number of second homes in the community now.
I think it's 19%
of our housing stock is those second homes. So there's no guarantee that it would be then available for or used for long-term occupancy, but not eliminating the short-term rental potential, which one could conclude that it would be available potentially for something different.
So someone commented here and it kind of summed up my personal thought. Says, I think everyone should have the opportunity to rent a room in their house if they want to. And I guess, you know, I'm not going to say let's just go whole hog in here, but is there an opportunity to distinguish between somebody renting a room in their house for three nights versus their whole house? Is that a thing? or is that just something in my head? Or because I see such a different play out with that.
Yeah, and my research of other jurisdictions and how they've addressed these concerns, there is this concept of hosted short-term rentals, meaning that the primary resident, that you're only renting your primary residence, or that you are on site, you know, during that rental situation. So it's either as a room in the home, or if you have an accessory dwelling unit, that you would still remain on site. So that is a concept that others have utilized to address their concerns within those communities. So that's certainly a tool that has been used before.
Matt, if I could just kind of build on that a little bit. There are examples of that. There's obviously the city of Bandit allows for a 30 days or less out of the year, a permit. You still need a permit. And that's for those folks that truly are just renting out their house while they're gone on vacation. And they're not subject to the buffer requirements, so that they can do those on a small scale basis. They still need a permit. I think it's cheaper. It's not quite as rigorous, but I think there's an opportunity to create some tiers if that's the direction that the Planning Commission and the Council want to go into.
Honestly, reading through some of the answers here, I mean, there are obviously people who use it to have enough income to be able to afford to live here. And I love reading that. It's like, oh, wow, that makes a lot of sense. And I see how the impact would be less than having like a full-time long-term rental, like really roommate in your house. Yeah, in my opinion, it would be worth looking into different ways of kind of looking at the data. Under the evaluation of other standards and actions that prohibit STRs in urban growth boundary expansion annexation areas, if we grow out, I mean, I don't want to have houses dedicated to being a short-term rental, but if it meant that someone might be able to afford to buy there, that's different to me. And that's it.
I do see that it looks like we have a plurality of the people live in their short-term rental, which is interesting. It means it's not necessarily a home that's just going unoccupied, you know, unless there's a short-term vacationer there. And I think I saw the one that caught my eye was the council's considering applying the concentration limit to condos. And that is the second most commonly rented short-term rental outside of a single-family dwelling. And that would free up, and presumably a condo would be a little cheaper for someone to buy or rent long-term than a whole house in Sisters. I kind of like that idea.
I do too.
Yeah.
Apply the concentration limit to condominiums. Yeah.
On page 24 of 28 in the comments, the last comment was talking about STRs serve as a vital role to our tourism. So you'll like the big threes, the rodeo, the quilt show, and the folk fest. Is there some way we can have short-term rentals for just those weekends and not rest of the year type thing? You know, a limited use short-term rental or something, you know, tiers, like you'd mentioned. Because that will help with, you know, getting the beds to make sure we can still host those events here. There is a balance.
Like a specialized or identified window.
Right, for those special weekends or
whatever. Kind of a temporary use or occupancy.
Yeah, that'd be pretty cool.
So I don't want to lose, I want to kind of pull the group, kind of look for consensus of it on these to bring back to the council. So the concept of hosted short-term rentals, meaning either that the owner is present on site. That's one. Is that something worth exploring?
What Sarah brought up?
Yeah,
definitely. I think those are really different things to having a vacation rental and having a hosted on-site place. I think they're very different.
In particular, if it's their primary residence.
Yeah.
And they're trying to afford.
Yeah.
So, and I'm looking at this kind of the primary residence concept of that maybe there's two prongs there, the hosted that you're actually on site, or that you occupy it a certain percentage of the time, that knowing that it's available for you to rent it when you're gone for the weekend or on your own vacation, but it's still limited to the 30 days that Scott noted, or some other framework like that. So maybe it's more in the concept of looking at ideas to provide opportunities for renting your primary residence. I mean, that's a different way to couch it either. So we can then we can drill down on what those best options, either present on site or rent it while you're gone.
It seems to me like the whole reason for looking at short-term rentals as a potential problem, air quotes, is lack of affordable housing, and maybe lack of community, whatever that means. And both of those issues seem to be tackled by, I mean, a short-term rental that involves the primary resident still living in that home and renting it out when they're gone on a weekend. That doesn't affect community. That doesn't affect housing affordability, because those people are going to live there anyway, even if it were banned. That's their home. So,
all right, great. And the idea of the applying the concentration limit to condo developments, under the concept that may be an affordable option for long term. Yeah, but looking for that's something worth continuing to explore.
I don't want, like, the idea of, like, pulling a license from somebody who currently has a short-term rental condo. It seems they bought it and they probably had that in mind. So you don't want to, you know, pull the rug up out from under people. But yeah,
I would think that if somebody bought a condo and say there's 20 in the grouping and 19 of them became short-term rentals, that could become a really weird place to live.
A hotel.
I've heard some very strong complaints from people that own condominiums that they're surrounded by vacation, you know, the vacation rental stuff, and they hate it. So it might make some condo owners happy that use them for themselves.
And your point about losing kind of your existing license, that's back to that limiting the transferability or being cautious of not a takings or a loss of a vested right for your property.
Right.
So we can fully defer evaluate that. Yeah.
And you know, Matt, I was just looking at the expanding the concentration limits to 500 feet. I'm not necessarily in favor of that because it covers everything. You know, it would cover all these different types of short-term rentals. And I'm not sure that's the approach that I would like to see taken. I would rather have them look at the different types and look at the ones, because that's a big step.
What if it were non-owner occupied?
Yeah, I'd be fine along with that.
Qualified.
Yeah.
So find the unicorn, Matt.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think we've got a framework kind of happening here. But general consensus on the idea of maybe only apply the any concentration limit increase to the non-owner occupied. You know, we're using that phrase to, however, not primary residence.
Yeah.
Would that still exclude probably the downtown commercial district? You know, I mean, would we, you know, want to do something like that? Because people don't necessarily live downtown. You know, that's more of a short-term type atmosphere, possibly. You know, another caveat for that 500-foot thing, you know, having it higher concentrated in the downtown commercial.
So you're promoting not applying the concentration limit
to the commercial. Downtown commercial.
Right, yeah, yes. Bullet number two, I can support completely.
Yeah. Oh, yes, that.
I think through both bodies. Yeah, we're kind of pulling back from that idea. Then the concept of maybe these temporary windows, you know, event windows, where it's more broadly allowed.
Right, a higher concentration for those, the big three. I call them the big three, our big.
What is it, Sisters Folk, Quilt Show,
Sister and Folk Rodeo? Festival, Rodeo, and the Quilt Show, yeah.
Okay.
That's where most of our businesses make like 50% of the income during those 3 weekends.
It's a good idea.
Okay.
If it's workable.
Yeah.
Right, if it's workable, and that brings that tourism here. Yeah. And, you know, that should be worded as such that, you know, if the city were to come up with some other cool festival or something, that can be brought into that type of thing, you know, some way to loosen that language to allow for future.
Yeah, it seems like it would. Yeah. Are the dates the same every single year?
Yes.
Yeah.
On all three?
For those three.
The folk festivals shifting things around.
Right. They're trying to, you know, settle down on what they're doing, but.
Okay. We can massage that and see, you know, that's our job, is to take these kind of general ideas and see if they're workable, if they're legal, and what those kind of pros and cons are. And then we can bring back some kind of ideas to further consider.
So when short term, when something is rented, there's some tax on it. Can you just walk through that, or do you have that information? Just
I read very that high level. I have a new in here somewhere. Like
the transient.
Yep. Yes. So all lodging units are subject to a transient room tax here in the city limits. Our rate that we have is 8.99%. So that is something a factor to consider with, you know, related to revenue generated, you know, that can be utilized by the city as a whole. Is that the number you were looking for?
Yeah, thank you. And then 0.99%, I think, goes to affordable housing projects. I think there's a little bucket somewhere.
I'm seeing head nod from Scott.
That's correct. It goes into our affordable housing grant fund that we disperse every year.
There's things that are going on behind that. If we ripped all this out, there may be like some small repercussions.
Absolutely.
Revenue loss.
Yeah, levers.
Yeah.
Wasn't it in the packet someplace where there's like a whole bunch of money that was brought in? I can't find it now in the packet here, but I thought you did detail the amount of income that comes in the transient room tax.
Yep.
Yeah.
So for 2022-23, approximately $260,000 in transient room tax were collected just for short-term rentals.
It's a chunk of change.
Yeah.
So that's where somebody just needs to, why don't you put this in there? Somebody needs to build a big hotel on that lot downtown to increase, you know, you follow it, you wordsmith it.
Okay. Well, open to other ideas, or if we want to open it up to.
I would like to open up for comments from anyone in the audience or online.
Okay, I'm going to do a roll call. And since Curtis expressed comments earlier, I'm going to call on Curtis Cook first. Would you like to provide comments?
Do you hear me?
Yes, I can. Thank you.
Okay, perfect. Yeah, I mean, I think most of the comments that have been said have been very positive with this agenda, and I see the concerns on both sides of this. As I think I stated, was adding maybe a couple things as well and making sure that we're keeping this moving so we can keep the economy moving as well. I think this there's more sides to one story than meets the eye, and I think you guys have a great plan, but the concern is that are we limiting too much so applicable taxes as well as also the applicable opportunities for other vendors and opportunities are able to be properly out there for people. And, you know, Sisters really relies on, you know, the vacation and community as well. So is that something you guys, I mean, hopefully have considered as you guys go through this process? and that'd be final as well.
Thank you.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Okay, the next name I'm going to call on is RM. Would you like to provide any comments tonight?
Yeah, I just have a question about enforcement. You guys are talking about a lot of changes and policies that require oversight, and I'm wondering how you guys are going to enforce all this and what the financial or fiscal impact is going to be in having folks at, you know, for the city review all of it.
RM, could you please state your name and address?
Yeah, Rick Marai, 801 East Highway 20.
Thank you.
Those are certainly aspects of the program, and any potential changes we need to keep in mind. Those, you know, and that's with any policy making, those, you know, financial, social, even environmental impacts with any changes. But we're really just having that initial conversation of what should we evaluate, and enforcement is a critical aspect of any regulation and permitting process, because we don't want to explore or adopt standards that are difficult or impossible to enforce. So that's the follow-up mechanism is through our land use permitting, and also noting the operator's license that is that annual renewal that does have a lot of the reporting and confirmation of that rentals are in compliance with those standards that are built in there. But definitely considerations we need to keep in mind as we contemplate changes.
Any other comments from you, RM?
Oh, no, that's fine. Thanks.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. All right. And the next name I'm going to call is Eric Strobel. Would you like to provide any comments on tonight's workshop?
No, thank you.
Okay. Thank you.
Let's go back to Curtis.
Hey, Curtis, I'm going to call on you again. Would you please provide your name and address for the record?
Absolutely, and sorry for not giving that to you guys. It'll be Curtis Cook and 750 Brooks Camp Road.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Yep. Absolutely.
I'm sorry. Shoot. Okay, there you are. Sorry, Curtis, I cut you off.
No, it's all good. I appreciate it. The device is going to be a bit cumbersome. So I guess what I probably asked, I guess a question, and it sounded probably more like a dialogue. If you guys can remember, wrap back to what I was talking about when it came to inspections, as well as also safety opportunities for SDRs. What was your guys' possible answers you guys would have for that?
Noting that within the operator's license, just kind of a general overview, within the operator's license criteria is an opportunity for inspection by city staff and with proper notice. And built in there is also requirements for proper fire and safety provisions, you know, from fire extinguishers, smoke detectors, carbon monoxide, et cetera. So that is confirmed, you know, those opportunities for inspection are part of that either renewal process or upon receiving a complaint or call of concern and confirmation on a regular basis.
Okay, perfect. And then as wise as impacts to economical opportunities, i.e. vacationing, obviously events, I hear that, you know, through your guys' process this evening, that you guys have acknowledged that as an issue. Is that something you're concerned with moving forward, it being quite an impact, or is there a way that we're going to reduce that impact and prevent that from happening, not only to the locals, but also the individuals that visit the area?
I think that's all part of this process. Again, kind of acknowledging where we're at. We're just kind of in fact-finding in what we know and data collection and sharing that and getting the impressions from the City Council and the Planning Commission. Next steps are to kind of initiate a formal process. And that's when we'll start to develop any potential code language and evaluate those particular impacts. So I think it's premature for me to comment on those.
Yeah. I would just build on that again. Those are viable concerns, but I think those are concerns that really are the domain of the City Council. They're in charge of the purse strings in the community and responsive to a wider variety of issues than just the Planning Commission, who is responsible for looking at our development code and taking direction from council. So I think those are good issues to bring up through the process, like Matt said, as this thing progresses. And it's really something that they are best suited to weigh in on in terms of potentially reducing, economic development or revenue or increasing it or impact to the affordable housing grant fund, those kinds of things, I think are their domain. So.
Okay. And do you mind if I make an additional comment before we're done with this? Well, so ultimately speaking, there was a couple lines here that was talking about the concerns between long-term tenants and short-term tenants. To kind of preference my experience, we own a housekeeping company in the area, and I can concur that we have seen an extensive amount of damage for less than 10 properties that we have served that are long-term situations compared to almost the 65 properties we serve on a short-term basis by almost an appalling amount in damages. Probably we saw last year alone close to $1.8 million in damages to properties that are long-term. From a matter of simple things that are, wear and tear, that's one thing, but we're talking all the way up to actual fecal matter on walls, ceilings, all the way down to, people intentionally destroying properties that people really worked hard for. And so when I see the STR community side of things, I see both sides of it. So I see who is impacted by it. And I'm sorry about the background noise, little ones, but the ultimate end agenda that I have with this, at least my observations, is that the STR damages, we've probably seen less than $10,000 in damage in last year, 2023, that we've experienced, because we put our hands on the properties every time and making sure they're insured to be in the best condition. And it's appalling. And this is the reason why more people are invested into STRs. And I'm speaking in a 600 square foot apartment right now with a family of five. So I totally get people from their position. I've got all positions on it. And is it difficult to have three kids in one apartment this small? Yes. But is it something that we can work from? Absolutely. And it also jeopardizes our opportunity to grow as well if the STR community is impacted. So there's a lot of people that are being impacted. This is not just one sided. This is probably more like 8 or 10 different sides of the story, to be honest, because there's a lot of dynamics in the situation. But that's all the other comments I have as well. Any questions for me as well?
Thank you for your comments, though. Really appreciate
Absolutely.
It.
Absolutely. Thank you. Thank you for your time.
Thank you.
Did I understand him right, saying there's about 10 times as much damage done to long-term rentals as short-term rentals?
Yeah.
That's what I heard. That's what I heard, yeah.
Okay. Well, so acknowledging for the group here and those in attendance that we're really just at the forefront of any review process. My next steps, if I feel like we're at that point, is I'm scheduled to go back to City Council for another workshop to provide the results of this conversation tonight, as well as take a deeper dive into that legal implications or considerations relative to the transferability restrictions and any kind of pause or moratorium, and just kind of get those final thoughts before we move forward with any potential actual changes to the code. So I would expect my return trip to you guys will be more of a kind of code writing workshops and to draft some language, followed by formal public hearings. And then we'll take that recommendation from the Planning Commission and have a subsequent public hearing with the City Council for any formal adoption of those have changes to the code. So we'll still have a lot of process, still a lot of opportunity for planning commissioner engagement as well as the public. So those that are tuning in, thank you for joining us tonight. And please don't hesitate to stay engaged and certainly participate in where and how you feel appropriate.
Thanks, Matt.
Anything else on the short-term rentals before we move on to?
I would like to ask staff one question. You know, part of the permit process, do we have anything built in there to ensure that we have an adequate amount of accessible units, you know, ADA type compliant short-term rentals available? I mean,
I can't speak to that with absolute certainty, but, you know, not being a building code official, but my understanding is that these remain single family dwellings, just with this rental component. So, and knowing that single family dwellings are not required compliance with ADA standards, I don't know that that's a implication with this. But that said, if it's in a multifamily residential development, an apartment building, there may be that component required as part of that development. But going back to single family dwellings are not subject to ADA.
Yeah, I wasn't saying that we should make all of them ADA compliant, but just that there's a appropriate number out there so those less fortunate than you or I can still come here and enjoy it.
We'll keep that in mind and certainly want them to be, you know, subject to the applicable requirements. Again, kind of going back to that, these remain homes. So for example, we don't require a certain number of single family dwellings to be ADA accessible. Kind of falls under that same category.
Thank you.
Okay. Do you have any comments or anything you want to share with the commission?
I don't have any more to say tonight.
You don't have anything more to say? You've said enough? No more commissioner comments. No more. Do you guys have any?
You did a great job. Thank you. You always do.
Thanks.
It makes me proud to be part of the, you know, since okay. I'm still new, I can still be proud to be here.
Oh, well, thank Scott, you know,
I'll say something if you really want to hear something.
Yeah, Scott, go for it.
Just real briefly, just for planning for future meetings. We are planning to have a meeting on the 15th. It will be another work session. And the topic will be ethics training. Not that there's anything in particular that you're doing wrong, but we do this as a refresher every year. And we'll have Garrett go over just kind of refresher on conflict of interest and bias and ex parte communication, all that good stuff. And then I understand it's a certain someone's last meeting too, but we won't name names. So that, please plan on, if you're available, attending that meeting. And that's it for right now.
Wait a minute.
Thanks, Scott. Is that why we're having a meeting on ethics?
Yeah.
Speaking about
No coincidence. That's all.
I didn't think so after those emails I wrote you. So just so you guys all know, I'm moving back to Nevada. And so in 2 weeks, it will be my last meeting. So.
I'm sorry to hear that.
So this is not your last meeting.
This is my last meeting as the acting chair and vice chair.
Well, I mean, he could get sick. You don't know.
Okay. Anyway. Any other comments before we end this meeting and go on with the chatter? Okay. Meeting adjourned.
Thank you.
Thank you, everyone.
Thanks, guys.
Great job, too. Yep.
Thanks, Scott.
Thank you, guys. Have a good evening. Bye-bye.
Bye.